The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsensewealth.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939. This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
It was another record-setting week for the major indices like the S&P 500 and the Dow Industrial Average, except for the NASDAQ Composite, which fell 0.3% from last week. Most of the momentum in stocks carried over from last week's momentum, which was spurred on by the Federal Reserve meeting that showed three rate cuts in the summary of economic projections, as well as from the commentary from Chairman Powell at the press conference about the discussion to pare back on the balance sheet runoff soon. This week was a short week with the financial markets closed for Good Friday. It was also a week that marked the end of the first quarter with typical rebalancing and the acknowledgement of the first quarter earnings season just right around the corner. The S&P 500 rose this quarter in the best performance since 2019. During the week, there were minor stories that didn't really change the narrative. China announced it will not allow chips from AMD and Intel to be used in government computers on Monday as the chip war escalates between China and the US based on efforts to build an edge in the development of AI. The news and trading because of the news was likely the culprit behind tech's underperformance this week. The Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore collapsed overnight Monday because of being struck by a container ship that lost propulsion. The collapse could spell issues with the supply of goods in the local region, which could have inflationary implications down the road. Wednesday, the S&P Standard & Poor's downgraded several regional banks to negative from stable due to continued weakness in the commercial real estate market. However, the SPDR regional banking ETF, KRE, rose on the day despite the news. Finally, on Thursday, economic news encouraged broad buying interest to finish the week strong, the month, and the quarter. Economic results this week were largely encouraging. However, the regional manufacturing data this month seems to indicate the ISM figure may show a deeper contraction when it gets announced next week on April 1st. New home sales are not that great, with prices declining for the sixth month in February. February's durable goods orders were up 1.4%, showing a rebound for business spending after a poor January. Turning to March, consumer confidence showed little change, while the results from the University of Michigan's consumer sentiment increased, showing improvement from February. Weekly initial claims stayed at 210,000, which is low, showing conditions remained favorable. The third estimate on the fourth quarter GDP figure was revised slightly, higher to 3.4%, showing the economy remained resilient, even with the lag effect from the Fed's rate hikes previously in the year. So overall, it was supportive of the economic growth this week that allowed stocks to continue higher. Again, a short week on Wall Street with economic results supporting a strong finish to the week, month, and quarter. Potential catalysts from China's chip restrictions, logistical issues for the Baltimore region, and the Standard & Poor's regional bank downgrade, which seemed to have little effect except in the technology stocks, which are already coming off a great quarter of performance. Next week will largely be about the important March economic data with the ISM figures on Monday and I believe Wednesday, and the jobs data coming in from Wednesday through Friday. After that, attention will likely turn to earnings as we'll be talking about the first quarter earnings before you know it. I publish my monthly market observation for subscribers Thursday and will be posting it on financialsense.com next week. This month was all about inflation data, the Fed, resilient economic news, earnings insights for the first quarter, and sector rotations and strength in the commodity asset class happening right now. If you want to get early access to my work, please email me at ryan.paplava@financialsense.com to be added to my free and exclusive subscriber list. Up next, we've got Greg Weldon.
In 2 years, the expiration of the Trump tax cuts may result in higher taxes for many Americans. If you're tired of paying more taxes each year and want to keep more of your hard-earned money, consider reaching out to Financial Sense Wealth Management. Our team can assist you in creating a personalized financial plan aimed at lowering your taxes both now and in the future. With a custom-tailored approach, we can explore various options such as tax-free, tax-deferred, and tax-sheltered strategies to help alleviate your tax burden. By reducing your taxes, you'll have extra money in your pocket that can be used for spending, saving, or investing. Take the first step toward tax reduction by calling Financial Sense Wealth Management at 888-486-3939. Our experienced advisors are ready to discuss your financial goals and design a plan that works for you. Remember, planning now can save you from paying more later. Financial Sense does not provide tax advice. Clients or prospects should consult with their own tax advisors to determine the potential tax benefits or consequences of engaging in a particular strategy or transaction.
Well, it's been one heck of a week. We've got stock markets moving up, but there's something else moving that not too many people are paying attention to. Commodities are on the move, whether it's new record daily in gold. We have oil on the move, and even the ags are starting to move. I know of no better person to talk than Greg Weldon. He is publisher of Weldon Global Macros Strategy, and we often refer to him as the gold guru. Greg, let's begin with a picture that we're seeing. We're seeing, at least in the last week or two, we're seeing a rising dollar, and we're also seeing rising gold. Explain that, because you normally don't see that.
Yeah, I think that what you look at last week, you're going to look at it as a seminal period, you know, real kind of statement period. I called it Money Fest 2024 in a recent special I did on this. And the reason is you had 22 global central banks met last week. 8 of them cut rates. That's a good percentage, number one. 4 hiked rates, but that's places like Turkey, Angola, where the currencies are absolutely getting filleted and where gold is seeing its best performance in places like that. And then the other 10 left rates unchanged. The majority of them then telegraphed rate cuts to come later this year, including the Fed, to whatever degree they've already kind of said that. Now, we could talk about various countries, where their policy rates are, and where inflation is, and how much room they have to cut rates. I mean, you take places like Brazil, for example, where the interest rate's very high and inflation is very low, even Australia. So even Canada. Look at Canada, 5% interest rate, the core rate's 2.1. Now you have a punitively high real rate. They could cut rates rather dramatically here. So this money fest dynamic also kind of veils another huge thing that I have been talking about for the last 18 months or so, that you will have this inflation. We called it waiting for Godot, the alternate ending, if you recall, because waiting for Godot, two guys sitting around talking, waiting for this dude, Godot, who never shows up. Well, I made Godot inflation. And for a decade, and we've waited for Godot, and Godot hasn't shown up. And then it's the alternative ending. When Godot shows up, and he won't leave, and you wish he never came, right? And that's kind of inflation. So the degree to which you had the disinflation that was going to be natural, mathematical to whatever degree, and then, of course, you know, they did tighten, they did crimp some demand. You had the supply dynamic ease in some things, and then generally, so you had the disinflation, and we kind of called this. Now is the big, big, you know, mystery. What do we get next? And when you start to look at the labor market in the U.S., and we focus on the U.S. here, it is really cracking pretty hard. And I wonder if this isn't why kind of Powell is taking this different tack all of a sudden. Or if you remember last March, you know, the banking dynamic, they kind of had softened their stance a little bit then. And then turns out, and I even asked at the point of attack when the Fed and Powell's comments were very dovish at a press conference first quarter last year. And I said, what does he see that we don't see? And the next thing you know, we saw it. And it was a banking dynamic, right? And I kind of wonder here, is that not something that has to do with the employment dynamic here? And then when you say, well, hey, they really didn't do anything, but they did. They basically said, we are now going to figure out how to put in place an easing in the quantitative tightening. In other words, less tightening as it relates to balance sheet runoff. This is huge, Jim, because this gets really to the major point of attack, the line of scrimmage here, which is the debt and deficit. All right. They can't, be selling bonds when the supply is about to explode. In the latest budget numbers, all right, which were for February, gives us 5 months in the fiscal year. Latest budget numbers, public borrowing is $1.1 trillion in 5 months. Last year at this time, it was $270 billion. It's 3.5 times bigger. And the target for the whole year is $1.6 trillion. You're going to blow that out of the water. When you break down the spending, you see things that you don't want to see. And then you throw in the interest on the debt, Jim, $127 billion increase from this time last year. And it's, you've gone past the tipping point. So in that context, the Fed had to, maybe they see this coming and they say, look, we got to not be so tight in the bond market. And the degree to which the labor market is cracking, I think they know that you're going to see where we look back on this week and we realize central banks just flinched and they just acquiesced to higher inflation generally. And ultimately, and I've said this before just recently, not like I've always been saying this, because only now is it really possible that the Fed bails on their 2% target and makes it a 2 to 3% range. Because if you look at their forward projections, it's like 2.5% real GDP, 2.5% Fed funds, and 2% inflation. And it's kind of like they want everything in that zone, right? And to do that more effectively, they would move to a range. And that's acquiescing to higher inflation. All these things are bullish for gold, Jim. The dollar rallies because the Fed's behind the curve. You got other central banks cutting more and have a lot more room to move. And central banks, they're experiencing real currency problems. And that, it's not a rush to the dollar because the dollar's credibility is gone. He's the emperor with no clothes now. So in that case, it's a case for gold. It's a case for Bitcoin too, frankly.
Yeah, and if you look at this idea about inflation, Greg, I don't know anybody that believes that we're at a 3% inflation, whatever numbers the Fed uses. But I want to come back to something you said about maybe them flinching with the unemployment report, because we get these job numbers that come out the first Friday of each month and everybody celebrates. Look, we created 375,000 jobs. But what they don't tell you is the previous month, 250, they revised down to 130. And then also the disparity between the household survey that shows we're shedding jobs versus the monthly employment report that says we're adding jobs. So maybe the real numbers is why they're reacting like this.
Yeah, it's striking. I mean, if you look at the household survey, first of all, you see that they say the number of unemployed is up over 500,000 in the last 12 months. You see the U6 total unemployment rate is up 50 basis points, and it's 7.2 or 3 right now, up from, you know, 6.8, 6.7 a year ago. You look at the last 2 months, and you nailed it. You really did, because you have this growth in the payroll employment that doesn't show up in the household survey. And not only that, you have huge increase this month in the number unemployed. You have people dropping out again, right? The flow has been corrupted completely. So I find that interesting as well. Then you look at the number of people working part-time for economic reasons. And then you realize in the last year, the jobs created, part-time jobs. Full-time jobs over the last 12 months are down, right? Then you talk about the income and the average weekly earnings and average hourly earnings. And you really nailed it in terms of about the headlines. This is why you got to dig deeper into the data. You can't trust the headlines. And because the attention span is so short now, it's like you get it on Twitter, you see this, you see it on Bloomberg, it's a headline. You think you know the whole story. They're not telling you the whole story. It takes time to dig in. And I love it because this is why I have a business telling the whole story. But when you dig into things like the 2 months ago, when they were totally celebrating the rise in average hourly earnings to 4.5% on a year-over-year basis. What they didn't tell you is almost every sector in the economy posted lower hours worked, all right, which actually means it equated to a decline, outright deflation for the month in average weekly earnings and a 2.9% year-over-year rate, which is pretty much equal to the core CPI, which means you have no real wage gains. You have no savings left. You're relying on transfers. You have debt out the wazoo in the consumer household area. And banks in the senior loan officer survey just told us we're going to be tightening auto loans and credit cards, the standards and the conditions on these loans throughout the year. How do we make it to the end of the year anyway? So there's another case that maybe the Fed did stay too tight, too long. And if you look at kind of where inflation is now, let's say it's 3. They're at 5.5. That's 250 real rate. That's more than just sufficiently restrictive. So you can make a case they should cut rates 50 basis points right now just to stay restrictive without being punitively restrictive like they are in Canada.
I want to move on to a subject that you're an expert in, and that's the gold market. That's why they call you the gold guru. But I want to talk about what's going on internationally. We're seeing China, one of the largest buyers of gold. We're seeing BRIC countries. We're seeing OPEC. We're seeing India. They're trading in currencies outside the dollar. And if you have excess, let's say you're Brazil, you're trading with China, you have excess yuan, China is now, they don't want you messing around with their domestic market. They want you on the Shanghai Exchange where you can unload your yuan and get gold. So gold is now resuming its historical role as a currency.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that, you know, everyone's been talking kind of de-dollarization more recently, but that's something you and I have been talking about for a while. And, you know, I may have said this on your show before, but it's important for those that haven't heard it. I mean, for me, this all really kind of started in 2018 when China opened the Shanghai Futures Exchange and opened a crude oil contract and priced the benchmark OPEC grade as their, you know, as the contract, and priced it in renminbi, and then got the Russians to agree to, you know, benchmark their Urals crude against that price. And that was the beginning of the shift in power. And if you look at it from the perspective of, we're already have a world war. It's a resource war, Jim, and you know this. I mean, you know, and it, when you look at it in the context of what it really is, when you shave all the politics away, it's pretty, you know, pretty glaring. You're talking about China, Russia, and OPEC getting together, resource control, to whatever extent China's invested all kinds of money in places like Brazil, but even more so in Africa. They build this massive road the second we pull out of Afghanistan, through Afghanistan, Pakistan, all the way through the Middle East, down to Africa. Look at the history of China as traitors with the EU. I mean, the EU could be forced to fold at some point. So when you think about the long-term risk of the dollar, it's huge. And then you get to China, Russia get together during the Olympics. It's a 30 trillion renminbi loan package to come from state-owned Chinese banks to Russia to build another pipeline through Siberia into China to deliver crude oil. They engage Kazakhstan. These are 10 and 30-year plans they have put together for natural gas and crude oil. And it was immediately after that that Putin announced he's going to shut some of the output that would go to Europe was going to go to China. All right, and then of course they invade Ukraine. Why? I mean, well, you can say it's nationalism and all the rest of the stuff, which could theoretically be true, depending on your, you know, perspective on all that. I don't take a political perspective. But the bottom line is this about food supply and ports to ship it to China, Jim. So when you talk about that, you really look at what happens. And again, I say this a lot, but again, it's, you know, you'll come a day, I don't know how long it's going to be, where this is going to happen and people will be talking about it now as if it was an epiphany. We're just realizing this might happen, which when China is imports and exports $300 billion of goods every single month, largest importer and exporter every month by far, by 3-2 over the U.S. roughly. And when they say, look, we're only going to accept renminbi for our exports and we're only going to pay you renminbi for our imports, the dollar crashes, they win. We don't mess with them when they invade Taiwan and, you know, came over to whatever degree. And that's why you want to own gold, because that is the long-term future to me. When you even want to talk about the near term, then you can start talking about places like Angola, Nigeria, two major OPEC producers, 4 million barrels a day in crude oil capacity that's not even close to being fulfilled because their currencies are, you know, off the charts. So places like that also make a case for Bitcoin, because in places like that, you can't necessarily, you know, run down to the local bullion dealer and then where are you going to store your gold or your silver, right? This is, you know, a phone, an app, and you can transfer your currency and you will have some level of protection. So I think it really bodes well for, you know, other means than the dollar going forward.
Yeah, I want to talk about, because really what you've been talking about, we're moving from the petrodollar to the petro yuan, and then in that place, gold assuming its role as a historical currency. So I want to talk about another discrepancy that I'm watching, and I'm sure you're seeing this too, and that is whenever the price of oil starts to rise, you see the IEA comes out and lowers their demand forecast. Now, Greg, they've been wrong 12 out of the last 14 years. Their track record is about as good as the Fed's. And you compare that to OPEC's forecast, the spread between OPEC and the IEA is the largest I've seen it in probably the last decade or so. It's kind of like what we've been talking about, the spread between the household survey and the monthly unemployment rate.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because literally about an hour ago, I was just, you know, kind of looking at the energy market. And it's kind of disappointing, because I think you do have some fundamentals here. If you look at the U.S., I mean, gasoline and crude oil have pretty solid underlying supply demand fundamentals just domestically. So, and then you have the geopolitical risk overlay here, which I think, you know, is not going to go away anytime soon. So, you know, from many angles, not just in terms of the Middle East either, you got a lot of tension in a lot of places. There's a lot of conflict in the world right now that many places could blow up in that sense. And I'm not saying I think that or nothing. I'm just saying that's the risk. This is what we do, risk management, and then trying to take advantage of the situations to try and keep pace with the debasement of the purchasing power of money, wealth, and income. And in that context, you know, I think energy goes higher. If you look at really what's happened in energy, you have the bullish case, at least near to medium term, in the U.S. for crude oil and gasoline. At the same time, okay, that the FAN wind ETF, that the TAN solar ETF, that the iClean, QClean, PBW, all the green clean, all right, are getting wasted, right? And I think it was Ford, one of the major motor companies, just said today, like, kind of admitted that their sales of EVs are way behind. I mean, this is a political move that doesn't have the real teeth in terms of supply demand of energy to be, you know, implemented. And I think that that leaves energy in a very good place going forward. But again, it's one of those things where I've said this before too. I think gasoline's like a buy until it goes to zero. But that may never happen. We don't know. But we like the energy sector. And I said to myself, to get back to what I was to answering your question, your point, was every time we get up here, it gets whacked. And it feels a little like gold sometimes when it looks to break, you know, when it kept trying to get above 2000 and you had all these weekly downside reversals and you just knew someone was stepping on it. I feel there's some of that going on in crude oil right now.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because the EV market, 40% of the Teslas sold in the country are in California. We're early adopters here. We have sunshine and we're a green state. But one of the things, I got an EV, Greg, and one of the things I found out, you don't get a spare tire. I hit a pothole coming home from the movies. Tire went flat in 4 seconds. And I find out, you know, in order, you can't change it because you don't get a spare, you don't get a jack. Right. They have to bring a flatbed truck and load it up on a flatbed truck and take it to the dealership to change the tire. And that's, and we're in warm weather. Imagine the people in Chicago.
I would have thought by now that Tesla would have like robotic arms attached to the car that would change a flat tire for you if you were to get, you know, broken down. For the AI would know the tire was going to be flat before it was and change it at a red light or something. I don't know. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But anyway, I want to come back to commodities. When you're seeing, we've been talking about oil, which is breaking out. We're talking about gold, which is hitting new records. And we're also talking, let's talk about the agricultural sector because DBA is breaking out as well.
Yeah, I like the ags and the base metals are showing some signs too. I mean, clearly cocoa is off the charts. Okay, it's an amazing move. We caught it for our clients. I mean, it's been amazing. But we kind of called it in the sense that you have issues still with weather. I mean, again, you know, you had, you know, La Nina, and then now it's going to be El Nino, and then back to La Nina. I mean, you're getting these shifts now that never went from one directly to the other. There's usually a period in between. So you're getting all kinds of, you know, polarized weather. Jim, you know where I come from on the science side. I'm a science geek at heart, you know, always have been since I was a kid. And I mean, this is a scientific phenomenon. What we're going through, it has to do with where the solar system is in the Milky Way. It's a high energy place. You have a lot of light plasma hitting the ionosphere. It warms up the planet. You have the resonance of the planet is rising. You know, it used to be 7.83 hertz is what the crust vibrated. Earth actually vibrates and it's a heartbeat, right? And 7.83 hertz is the human heartbeat resonance frequency. So when you look at, you know, kind of being in harmony with the planet, you wonder why people are all messed up. They're out of touch, and they're out of touch on many, many angles, from the chemical side, from the brain side, and kind of from almost the physical side with this connectivity dynamic. So when you see everything polarized, there's reasons for it. There's reason politics are so polarized, and there's reasons the weather is so polarized. So the risk of these kinds of things, like you've seen in cocoa, happening more frequently, are huge and are only going to expand. And that's one of the things too, man. When you start talking about inflation and central banks and what they could do and the potential debasement of currencies, you got to think about things like what we're seeing right now in cocoa. And what if this happens in other commodities due to weather? And I think that that's a real risk. And again, that's not something you go out and buy commodities because of that. but it's something you keep an eye on the commodities. And when something starts to happen, you kind of understand there's a bigger picture story here, and it makes you more confident to get involved. There's a lot of commodities like that. Soybeans is one. Coffee is one of the more near-term opportunities, I think, right here. We've been long cotton. It's paid off. It's maybe gotten a little bit ahead of itself just for the fundamentals, but like it longer term as well. And then, you actually look at the base metals, all right? I mean, you have copper now, where inventories are down like 40% from their high, which was October of last year. And that high was still a very, very low level historically. And when you look at, you know, some of the shift between, Western warehouse inventories and China's held inventory, you actually have seen, it's not like these inventories are declining because China's are building. That's not what's happening here. So that's really interesting. It seems to be actual demand. And so you've taken a really bearish contango in copper and got it back to flat to where it's, you know, flirting with going into a bullish backwardation. Nickel has bottomed, for crying out loud. You want to talk about EVs and batteries and lithium. Nickel seems to have bottomed after going from literally $100,000 a ton to $16,000 a ton. Massive bear market in nickel that seems to be over. And you get something like even aluminum. I mean, there's, you got certain technical levels right above the market here where aluminum could be breaking out too. So there's opportunities in a lot of these commodities. And I think for the kind of even the retail investor, as well as the professionals out there, you know, being more diversified in more things and, you know, being a little more active is the way to play these things. It's like people almost have to, this is not a buy and hold passive investment market anymore. I mean, you know, like I've said this before too, stock markets in Argentina, stock market in Pakistan, I mean, stock market in these places, Turkey, they make new highs all the time. They're not keeping pace. And that's what's going to happen here. Stock market will make new highs when the Fed, you know, pulls their next lever to print more money, but other things will outperform it. And we're seeing that right now, Jim. The GDXJ and the GDX are making waves against the S&P 500. Like, you know, like this could be a major bottom in those ratio spreads. And that has me really interested at a time when the stock market is extended to the max. So that's a whole nother story that could unfold really quickly here.
Well, staying on the topic of gold, let's talk about those two indexes, the GDX and the GDXJ, which is juniors, because one of the things that we've seen, Greg, this is the longest I've seen gold hold above 2000. There was a battle there, but what are we in, like week 17, 18?
Yep.
It's been over 2000, but the miners have not kept pace with the price of gold until maybe recently. What's your take on the miners here?
Because you need the full picture. You need the Fed kind of to be playing ball. Gold was rallying on so many other things. You know, gold's rallying against silver. Gold's rallying against the dollar, even though the dollar is holding firm. I mean, so gold at new highs against platinum. So I think that gold was in its own little universe because it's so much more global. It is so much more monetary. It's so much more than these other kind of metals. And especially when you get to the equities, when tech is leading the way, Jim, people are not buying precious metals. It's that simple. So I see some signs that, you know, the rally in tech may be over, and I could talk about that for a long time, but to stay on point, we are seeing right now, the next thing to really watch for, and I wasn't looking at these two stocks today, but there's a good chance that they had good price action based on what the GDX did today, is to look at the downtroddens like Newmont. This bottoms, I mean, with the accumulation and yes, some more debt, but to the degree it's underperformed, I mean, gold takes off, and even the metal in the ground that's not currently being mined that they have bought up is going to be huge. When that bottoms, that'll be a real tell. But you're seeing the GDXJ and the GDX break out against gold. That's big here. You're seeing them both break out against the NASDAQ. That's big here. And I'm really kind of watching the degree to which they might even be able to pop relative to other sectors in the stock market, like the XLK, which is the information technology. Not quite there yet, but man, maybe a day or two away if we get this continued price action. The Gold Guru product that we produce, which is daily research, we actually quantitatively and then technically and then for my discretionary view, break down portfolios of all the mining shares. And you look at some, you know, you had this run in steel for a while, then it became copper. I mean, you know, Southern Copper and London, and now you got Hudbay pulling up the rear. So these have been pretty active markets. It just hasn't been, you know, the gold and silver mining shares, particularly silver. So keep an eye on silver. If silver can get above that 2650 level, That's going to be a real nice breakout. And the SIL has been just horrific. And some of the major silver miners have been putrid. So when that changes too, and I think we're close, that'll provide a whole nother opportunity. So there are lots of opportunities out there for sure, even amid all this chaos.
So if we were to sum up, you know, looking at the things we've been talking about, breakout in gold, breakout in oil, we're starting to see some look like early signs of breakout in the gold stocks. We're seeing it in the soft goods and the Fed getting ready to cut interest rates. So as we talked about, they're saying, oh, we could live with higher inflation rates. When you see all these commodities rising like this, let's break that down for what's this going to mean for our listeners in terms of inflation, because I see rising food costs and I can't help but believe it's going higher.
I agree. And we, you know, we've been saying this now for a while, not to pat myself on my, on the back, even though I have arms long enough to do that. It's one of those things where it hasn't been that hard a call, Jim. I mean, it really hasn't. And where you are right now is you've had this disinflation in the things that went way up because of supply chain issues. They've come all the way back down in many cases, like lumber, for example. And then you take things like energy, all right? We had the big increases, which drove the year-over-year rates of inflation higher. You had the big decreases. I mean, there was a point where, you know, gasoline in the CPI was down over 30% year-over-year. That's a huge negative contribution. The fact that you were still positive in inflation to the degree you were is a statement to how everything else was covering energy's butt on the way down here, right? I think the move in energy now from a calendar perspective is done. And that's huge because you remove that negative dynamic within the numbers. And I will tell you, the number that just came out, what was it, 2 weeks ago, I guess, for the month of February, what really caught my eye, and this is, I'm a pattern recognition guy too, math, science geek. When I saw that the things that had the biggest disinflation and some deflation, like non-durable goods, excluding medical care, for example, was deflation, right? So when you look at the things that were the biggest disinflation, there were 1.1 year over year, 0.9, minus 1, had gains of 0.8, 0.9, 1.2, even as high as 2% for the month. When you see that kind of thing, it's a turning point. It always has been. I've been doing this 40 years. I've seen this before. And even in that context, the things that had the highest rates of year over year also had large monthly gains. When you take the Cleveland Fed's median CPI, which is a good one to look at because it's usually lower, the annualized rate, and they take what they do is take the monthly number and annualize it, and that's how they track it, 6.5%. It's been above 6% for 13 out of like the last 16 months. And it's the only time in history of this number, which goes back to the 90s, that has been above 6%. So this is one of the things keeping the Fed in check. And what happens? I mean, you get inflation rise, you know, comes back to say 4.5, 5. If you're at 5 and the Fed's at 5.5, they're neutral. So then what? I mean, and that's when you could really be interested in gold if they don't hike rates. That's a statement unto itself that would be really bullish for gold. So we'll see what happens.
So summing this up, where do you see the best opportunities from the charts and things that you follow?
Well, you know, it's a question you should ask me every day. Now, I am not a scalper, not a trader. I'm not in and out. I want positions months, if not, you know, 2 years. I've had positions like in copper, for example, on the way up. So I want long-term positions and I want to catch the biggest trades and I'm a very low-risk guy. But, you know, it's in currencies, commodities, even to the degree bond markets will be very volatile here. Get a big, you know, bullish move in bonds. And then some of the realities around debt hit $307 trillion globally. It's not just the U.S., man. I mean, what was it? 41 countries now have a debt to GDP above 100. 41. That's insane. You know, so, you know, you might have huge shorting opportunities in bonds at some point in the future. I think people need to be in more vehicles. And I love futures, but people can also recreate some of that in the ETF space. Or, you know, you kind of take the sectors, take the big macro themes, and then buy the best performing stocks in those sectors or those ETFs overweighted in a portfolio. I think there's a lot of ways to do this. And what we try and do now has kind of become kind of my mission statement. I've been doing this for so long. And seeing what's happening here and seeing, you know, what's happening with the U.S. dollar, it's like the emperor with no clothes. You know, I could say a lot, you know, I could use a lot of other worse analogies. That's for sure. I prefer not to. I love the U.S., but at the same time, I don't like what I see happening here with the dollar. So in that case, I think it behooves everyone to be more active and more aggressive. And we try and offer options for people in ways to do that, where it's almost like you got to become your own hedge fund. It's the only way to keep pace with the debasement of your money.
All right. Well, listen, Greg, as we close, if they'd like to find out more about the things that you do, tell them an easy way to do so.
Sure, Jim. Thanks. The easiest way is just shoot me an email. I answer them all. sales@weldononline, weldononline.com. It's that simple. And we have the Go Guru. We have actually a stock product called the Portfolio Playbook. That's once a week. And then the Big Picture that has retirees, and it has, some of the largest hedge funds in the world are my clients. When I used to work on one of them, for the Global Macro Strategy Report, which has all of this. And then, of course, I am a CTA, Jim. I don't really push that too much, but for myself, I think it's a great time to be trying to raise money and help more people, and at the same time, improve my own standing so that I can better survive what's coming next as well. So shoot me an email if any of that's accredited investors only, and it's a pretty high minimum investment because I'm a low risk guy, and to be a low risk guy and with these kind of moves, dollar value in the moves in the NASDAQ and the gold market is, it has to be a high minimum.
All right. Well, listen, Greg, have a great holiday weekend and hope to talk to you once again.
I think that the markets are priced for perfection, and that in a double sense, not only because financial markets have refuse to price in the growing geopolitical risks and threats out there, but also because I think most investors or many investors are focused on what the Fed is doing and saying. There is an excessive focus on the Fed, while the Fed is actually the most passive of the state actors. When you look at the Treasury, the US government, and the White House, they are being very expansionary. They are being very aggressive with government stimulus. So it's quite interesting that financial media is so focused on the Fed, but the fact is the Treasury is very expansionary. The US government is spending a lot of money. So there's a huge stimulus coming from the government, and the government is using what I call fiscal policy plus methods to actually support the economy with enacting new policies, regulation, giving big grants to companies for them to invest in strategic areas for reshoring, friendshoring, to bring back certain technologies, to bring back, for instance, semiconductor production, chip production to the US. The government is intervening in many, many ways that are expansionary. In that sense, the strong rally in US stock market is very rational. When you have such an expansionary government policy and you have a real economy that is just growing moderately, all the excess cash, all the excess liquidity will go to risk assets, which in this case could be Bitcoin, could be Nvidia stock, could be other tech stocks in the NASDAQ, right? So markets are behaving in that sense quite rationally, but priced for perfection.
At Financial Sense, we provide financial news for high net worth investors and strategists. To listen to this full interview and gain access to all of our premium content airing during the week, where we discuss markets and big investment trends, often well before they reach the mainstream news, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button. Well, we're seeing a new breakout in the price of gold, and it is very strong relative to nearly every major currency. And we believe that possibly going to see some fireworks here as we move through the months ahead. Joining us on the show today, as always, for our Smart Macro segment is our Chief Investment Officer here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, Chris Poplava. So, Chris, tell us, what do you think is moving the gold market so strongly right now?
You've got a lot of the developed world, Chris, that's struggling. I mean, you've got the Chinese yuan, which was on the verge of hitting a multi-year low. The Bank of Japan is threatening to intervene in their currency market because their economy is not doing as well. UK is struggling. Europe is struggling. And so much of the developed world, Chris, and even parts of the emerging markets are struggling. And we are starting to see, Chris, a cycle of easing. So we've already seen a few emerging market central banks start to ease. We've seen a few surprises from developed central banks starting to ease. And I think it's only time where we'll start to see the big central banks of the Fed, the European Central Bank, Bank of England, start to cut rates. So I think that's what is ultimately gold is sniffing out, is that we are on the cusp, or we actually have already started a global easing cycle in monetary policy. And a lot of that, again, stems from falling inflation. It has stabilized in a lot of areas, but it's not as high as it used to be. But there's, you know, a lot of central banks kind of have the dual mandate, right? There's the trade-off between inflation and then the labor market and economy. And I think they're starting to get more concerned about the economic health of their respective countries versus being fearful of inflation. So I think, you know, the focus or priority now is a focus on the economy now that inflation is off of its highs. And even here in the US, Chris, I still see signs of slowing. And I think a lot of the data we're getting is going to be heavily revised down such that we really get in a false sense of what's going on in real time. Because again, the data is heavily massaged on the way down.
Yeah, one of the things that Greg Weldon mentioned is the fact that, you know, gold appears to be sniffing out, like you said, a major inflationary impulse that central banks have essentially acquiesced to higher inflation rates, with the Fed likely abandoning the 2% target for more of a range between 2 and 3%. And it appears, like you said, other central banks also moving towards a much easier posture. And that's largely what's breathing so much life into gold at these levels. And I do want to point out, we're going to have some charts posted along with this interview. And I would encourage you, all of you, if you are at financialsense.com right now, to look at the chart that we have, which is basically a breadth reading of gold. When you look at the strength of gold relative to nearly all of the different world currencies out there, it is green across the board. When is the last time, or have you ever seen this level of strength of gold relative to other currencies?
I created this table, Chris, honestly, I think maybe 15 years ago. And I check in on it periodically. And usually there's one currency that is, you know, doing better than gold in any particular time frame. But, you know, as the chart shows, or the table, I look at it on a 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, year to date, and a 12 month basis. And it is a sea of green. Not one currency is up against gold in the last year or any of the other smaller timeframes. I mean, this is universally a strong move in gold. For example, on the high end, you've got gold up 19.5% year to date against the Chilean peso. And its worst performance is against the Argentine peso at about 7.5%. So its worst performance, Chris, is still very strong. And like I said, this is universal. And we've really seen it pick up on the last 3 and 6 months, where those returns are quite sharp. And gold hit an all-time high. And, you know, for me, when we look at gold, Chris, we look at it priced in dollars, right? But if you would have looked at gold priced in yen, the Canadian loonie, or any of the other developed currencies, gold hit an all-time high, you know, a year ago, in some cases, 2 years ago. It's just now in the U.S. we're seeing it break out definitively above 2100 to hit a new all-time high. But it is universally strong. And this tells me, Chris, that this move could have some momentum to it. And as I alluded to, I think a lot of this, Chris, has to do with central banks more worried about the economy than inflation. And inflation is not below, for most countries, below 2%. So essentially, we're starting, Chris, an easing cycle with some of the highest inflation rates that we've seen prior to other easing cycles, where, you know, sometimes central banks are worried about outright deflation. That's currently not the case right now. But we're not just hearing it in economic data. We're also hearing this from corporations, from their earnings announcements on their conference calls. For example, from FedEx, they said, "Weakness in global trade continues to constrain demand in our international business, which has remained challenged for longer than expected. Looking now by geography, in the United States, conditions have been weaker than we anticipated. And internationally, we continue to see softness." Nike said, "As for guidance, we are prudently planning for revenue in the first half of the fiscal year to be down low single digits." From Lululemon, "As you've heard from others in our industry, there's been a shift in the U.S. consumer behavior of late, and we're navigating what has been a slower start to the year in this market." From Darden Restaurants, "Each of our segments grew total sales and profit in an operating environment that was tougher than we anticipated." So you're hearing this constantly from various restaurants, from shoe companies, clothing companies, from FedEx. We're really seeing signs of weakness. And the one thing, Chris, that, you know, we have discussed is there is a lag between monetary policy and when that finally hits the economy. So the Fed began to raise interest rates in 22. They stopped in 23. They have yet to cut. But that hiking that we went through in 22 and 23, a lot of it is just hitting. And the reason why, Chris, it takes a lag, think about it. You took out your mortgage, you took out your auto payment, whatever type of loan you took out. Well, it takes a while for that loan to mature, right? I mean, we've got 5-year auto loans, 6-year, 7-year even auto loans, 30-year mortgages, and you don't feel the impact of a Fed rate hike cycle initially. It's only when you have a maturing loan that you have to then reset at a higher rate. So we've got loans, Chris, that are being that are maturing every single day that are likely significantly higher interest rates than what they had to deal with, you know, 5, 7, 3, even 3 years ago. So we're still feeling the impact of the Fed's tightening cycle. And so, you know, the whole idea of a recession is off the cards. I think those are economists or strategists who are not respecting that monetary policy impacts the economy with a lag. And that lag, Chris, I think is still with us. And that's why I think a lot of the economic data we're getting is going to be revised heavily down.
Right. And that was what we discussed with you in prior segments, going back last few months, at least, how you had been pointing out that 86% of states now at this point are seeing rising unemployment levels, giving a very different view than what we see with the official government data when you look at the state data. And you actually just sent me a report last week pointing out that California admitted that they had to heavily revise their job market data down as well. Tell us a little bit about that report and if this is an important signal for what we're seeing nationally.
Well, the last two times or segments that we had together, Chris, I was pointing out the significant discrepancy between the household survey, where the government picks up the phone and calls households and asks them if they're working, versus the non-farm payroll or establishment survey, which the government is estimating jobs based on businesses that are created, which is the birth-death model. And we noticed these divergences at turning points. And my argument was, seeing such a wide divergence between the household and the non-farm payroll report, to me, signaled that we are likely at an inflection point in the economy, and in particular labor, in that we would likely see the non-farm payrolls come down rather than the household survey be revised up. And what basically solidified that viewpoint, and this is really important because California is the most populous state in the country, was California came out, nonpartisan political group came out, basically said that California overestimated the job creation from their fiscal September 22 to September 23 by several hundred thousand jobs. So initially, we saw the estimate coming from California that they added over 325,000 jobs. In reality, the state only added 50,000. So we are talking nearly almost 300,000 jobs overestimated from reality. So that's a huge discrepancy. Essentially, for the size of California, they almost had zero job growth. I mean, when you look at it on a percentage basis, the preliminary estimate was for roughly just under a 2% growth rate for jobs. The household survey for California was negative 0.1, so actually lost some jobs. And then the revised data came in at around, I think, 0.1% growth. So the revised data is more reflective of what the household survey was saying the whole time. And that is essentially that the jobs were way overstated and that the household survey was more reflective of reality. Now, again, California is the largest, most populous state in the country, and we already saw what happened there. And we'd have to imagine it would be a similar trend for all of the other states. And then obviously nationally, that we might see some heavy revisions to payrolls. And to me, again, Chris, I think that's what gold is sniffing, is that we've got a global easing cycle on our hands, and gold hitting new highs in dollar terms is to me reflective of the view that the Fed itself will also join the party at some point and cut. There has been some pushback from Fed governors, but I think, Chris, honestly, it's only time. And I think as we get more and more data over the next several weeks and months, this will confirm that suspicion that I have.
Well, once again, we've been speaking with our CIO here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, Chris Baplava. We speak with him every 2 weeks for our Smart Macro segment to get an update on a number of things that he's looking at. Again, I would encourage you to look at some of these charts that we're going to post along with today's interview on financialsense.com. Chris, as we close, what would be the best way for listeners to follow more of your work or get in touch with you?
You can shoot me an email at chris.paplava@financialsense.com. I manage most of the firm's assets in the various portfolios, but I also have my own book of business for any potential prospect out there that doesn't meet our minimums. They can contact me directly if they're still interested in our services.
All right, Chris. Well, thanks for coming on. We look forward to speaking with you in another 2 weeks.
Look forward to it, Chris. Thank you.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.